On Thursday, January 16th, the historic impeachment trial of Donald Trump kicked off as the articles of impeachment long held by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi were finally submitted to the Senate. The Senate swore in Chief Justice John Roberts to preside over the impeachment trial, as senators also took a constitutionally required oath to administer impartial justice in accordance with the U.S. Constitution. Earlier in the day, House impeachment managers presented to the Senate the two articles of impeachment, reading the articles of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Those overseeing the impeachment trial are set to prosecute the case against Trump when the trial officially begins next week on Tuesday, January 21st. The Senate has issued a summons to Trump, who was until Saturday, January 18th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time to respond, this according to the New York Times. Now, earlier this week, House impeachment investigators released a new set of evidence that was obtained by Lev Parnas, an indicted former associate of Donald Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. The evidence, which included voicemails, photos, and text messages between Parnas and high-level Trump aides, reveal just how far Donald Trump and his administration were willing to go to dig up dirt on Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. Text messages, according to Politico, show potential surveillance of the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, and this while she was still actually on the ground in the Ukraine. Now, the Ukraine, they are now investigating this. Meanwhile, Trump and his vice president, Mike Pence, have both issued statements claiming they don't know Parnas, dismissing his allegations. But there are several photos of Trump and Parnas looking very happy and looking very chummy together. Within the Senate, there's growing controversy over whether witnesses should be called, and if so, when. Trump-aligned Republicans, including Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, are anxious to quickly acquit Trump, while others want to leave the potential for witnesses on the table. Senator Susan Collins from Maine announced in a statement on Thursday, January 16th, that she was likely to support calling witnesses after the initial phase of the trial. Also on Thursday, the FBI visited the home and business of Connecticut congressional candidate Robert Hyde in the wake of the released text that suggested Hyde was potentially monitoring the former U.S.-Ukrainian ambassador. And in May 2019, in a twist to all this, Hyde was mysteriously removed by police from Trump National Doral, Miami, in Florida. Now, meanwhile, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, has said that Donald Trump broke the law in withholding Ukrainian aid. And it remains to be seen if any of this will come out in the Senate trial. Let us go, before we welcome and have our panelists weigh in, let us go now to a clip from CBS on the impeachment process.
The interesting thing is, when you think about it, is that the House part of this proceeding is sort of like an indictment. It's the equivalent to what we prosecutors used to do when we bring charges. Then this is supposed to be analogous to a trial. And at a trial, normally, if it were a normal criminal trial, you would have it's all about the facts. It's all about figuring out what happened and having a jury fact finders figure out what happened. If that's the case, then we really need witnesses. Now, if they want to say no matter what, even if the facts you say are true, there's no impeachable offense, well, that's different. Mm. So the thing is, if they decide to dismiss the charges before hearing any evidence, that is essentially saying we don't think, even if this happened, that it's an impeachable offense. And so I think that should be clear. Republican senators should realize what they're saying. Mm. That is the message. This is not an impeachable offense. It is not impeachable for a president to use his position for personal gain.
Explain to our viewers actually how this is different from a trial that you might witness here in New York City versus what we'll see in the Senate.
Right. So the rules of a normal trial are set. They're set by the legislature or the court. In state courts, frequently courts have their own rules. And their rules of evidence and their rules of procedure. This is a situation in which, oddly, the jurors are also the people who set the rules.
Move your hair a little bit.
Yeah, are also the people who set the rules. So in that way, it doesn't follow those rules. Some much can happen behind closed doors. Some things will be presented to the public. Some things won't be presented to the public. And if there's a real political interest in and a majority to back that interest in just shutting this thing down, that's what will happen. And so it isn't the kind of procedure we're used to seeing, where there are two sides who have equal opportunity to kind of war it out.
All righty, there we go. I'd like to welcome our panelists. A lot to unpack here. I'd like to welcome Laura Carlson, Director of the Americas Program for the Center for International Policy. She is based in Mexico City. She's a regular contributor to Counterpunch, Fortune, America's Updater, Foreign Policy and Focus, and several Spanish language publications. Laura Carlson is also a television host and commentator on NAFTA, the drug war, immigration, and gender issues for various international news outlets. Laura Carlson, welcome.
Thanks very much, Margaret.
Jackie Goldberg, we'd like to welcome her. Jackie Goldberg is a governing board member for the Los Angeles School Board, District 5. She is a former member of the California State Assembly. Jackie Goldberg had previously served as a member of the Los Angeles City Council. Before being elected to the council, she served on and was later president of the Los Angeles School Board. Jackie Goldberg, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Dr. Gerald Horn, the Morris Professor of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston. He's written more than 30 books. His most recently published books include White Supremacy Confronted, U.S. Imperialism and Anti-Communism versus the Liberation of Southern Africa from Rhodes to Mandela, and Jazz and Justice, Racism and the Political Economy of the Music. He's also the author of Facing the Rising Sun, African Americans, Japan, and the Rise of Afro-Asian Solidarity, and also The Apocalypse of Settler Colonialism, The Roots of Slavery, White Supremacy, and Capitalism in 17th Century North America and the Caribbean. Dr. Horn, welcome back.
Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, and this is your first time with us for this new year, so we're happy to have you. Dr. Horn. Yeah, he writes way faster than any of us could read. And I don't even think that. Let's do a little test now. Dr. Gerald Horn, how many books have you actually written?
Well, I think your description of 30 plus is accurate.
In other words.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Anyway, okay, yeah, no. Dr. Gerald Horn. So, Laura Carlson, starting with you. You know, one has to wonder what people south of the border or people generally think about what is happening now in the U.S. I mean, Donald Trump has been impeached. Everybody's going on about a trial in the Senate. It's clear that this is going to be a very different trial than what one sees in court, where the jurors are supposed to be. You know, they're not supposed to have a position on their view, you know, before hearing the case, even though the Senate sworn in by Chief Justice John Roberts did have to swear that they would be impartial or some words along those lines. So this is really an odd situation because there's a huge battle going on as to whether this really damning new evidence, the evidence before was damning enough, but with this new evidence coming in, that the Republicans are blocking it. And not only are they blocking it, but they're also blocking access, reporters' access to senators throughout this process. Laura Carlson.
There's been a lot of interest abroad, as there has been within the United States, in the impeachment trial, although people both abroad and at home are very clear that they need 67 votes to actually remove Donald Trump from office, and with not a single Republican breaking ranks, no matter what the evidence that comes in, because they've demonstrated an unconditional allegiance to Donald Trump in many points, actually demonstrating a betrayal of U.S. principles and laws. So no one's expecting that to happen, which makes the trial, which makes the trial not an actual exercise in the possibility of removing the president, and everyone's aware of that, but an exercise in bringing to the fore some of the issues of corruption and illegality within this administration. Since the primary impact that people are looking at has to do with the impact it'll have on the upcoming elections this year, that's really what people are looking at. With this new evidence, we have the text messages that are indicating between Lev Parnas and Robert Hyde in particular that are indicating the illegal surveillance of the Ukrainian ambassador, with now the Ukrainian police investigating that. And there's a very important statement by Lev Parnas saying he, Donald Trump, was aware of all my movements. So if there were a real trial on this and not a trial that's completely subject to the discretionary rules of Mitch McConnell, you know, that would be one of the key points, what he knew when. And it seems to be pretty clear that Donald Trump, as more and more evidence, and especially this new evidence comes up, did know exactly and was orchestrating exactly what was going on there. Now, the Government Accountability Office report is extremely important as well, because essentially what it concludes is that it's illegal to withhold aid that's already been appropriated to a country because of political, personal, or, you know, presidential whims. Basically, the Office of Management, the Budget, was accused in this, not directly the president, but the quote itself was that a president cannot withhold aid, and of course that OMB office is within the White House. So the White House is beginning to come up with this excuse that that the accusation is against the OMB and not them, but it's a very weak excuse on any, whether you're looking at the way that it's structured or whether you're looking at actually what happens. This means that what we were hearing in the clip about impeachable or not impeachable is now going very, very heavily to the side of impeachable, because it's actually talking about an illegal act of the government. And in fact, the Los Angeles Times this morning, the editorial is, yes, Trump broke the law. So we can anticipate that GAO report will have a major impact. There's increased pressure to subpoena, if there's a possibility of doing that, Mulvaney, the former White House Chief of Staff. The Democrats have requested 4 witnesses. And even though it takes 67 votes to remove Trump, it only takes 51 for the rules to allow witnesses. And as you mentioned, there's indications that several Republicans would be leaning toward allowing witnesses. What Klobuchar said in the debate is true, that if there are no witnesses, she said they may as well make him king. And I think that there are people, even including some on the other side of the aisle, that believe that that would be a travesty. So the big question in the air now is to see if there will be witnesses called in that process. There's some indications, according to experts, that the appointment of managers by Nancy Pelosi, of people with real litigation skills and with law enforcement skills, indicates that she has an expectation that there's at least a possibility of a real trial. Because if it were a show, you would have show-type people in those offices, and she's looking at people who can really litigate. Again, this is really up to Mitch McConnell. The Constitution says very little about this process, and so we're subject to the power of the Republicans within there.
Yeah, and Jackie,
corruption is the larger issue.
Right. Okay, thank you, Laura Carlson. Jackie Goldberg, your thoughts on all this?
Well, I think the outcome is inevitable, so we have that to begin with. The real question is whether or not the public is going to have an opportunity to learn more about what happened or whether they're not. I think it's still only 50-50 that there'll be witnesses or anything else, but it's a very, very short process because McConnell is very committed to getting beyond this, mostly to protect his own members. I mean, I think he's actually now worried more about his members than he is about the president, because there is an election coming up, which, depending on how people perceive the role of Republicans in this particular instance, might affect those that are in trouble already. And you can see this best in Susan Collins. You know, she went from having a 78% favorable rate to now having a 42% favorable rating in her own state. After the Kavanaugh stuff, when she pledged, remember, that she would never do anything to hurt Roe versus Wade, ha, ha, ha. So that means that what we're really looking at are vulnerable Republicans and then people like Alexander, who are those few older Republicans still left in the Senate who believe in the rule of law over their own personal careers. That's really been the problem from the very beginning. This is really for the Senate Republicans about themselves, not about the president, not about the country, really not about anything, because they are very vulnerable. They know that the base for Trump, if he tells them this senator was a traitor to me and the party, they will put a Republican in the primary against them, and they'll get rid of them, and they know that. And so they are weighing not their conscience, but their political futures. And that's kind of the travesty that makes us all very worried about whether democracy is very real in America or whether always looking for how to save your own particular seat will become the most important asset for an elected official. You can see this in state legislatures. You can see this around the country, that where there is a powerful force of right-wing money and influence, you cannot rely on any of those people to use conscience to make decisions about what's happening in this country. That level of corruption is deeper than it has been in any time in my lifetime, and it really portends some very serious problems for the future, no matter how this particular trial comes out.
Yeah, and just to remind, thank you for that, Jackie, remind our audience that Trump's impeachment came after the official House investigation that found he had solicited foreign interference in the 2020 U.S. presidential election to help his reelection bid, and later obstructing the inquiry itself by telling his aides to ignore subpoenas for documents and testimony. And the Trump administration withheld nearly $400 million in military aid and an invitation to the White House of the Ukrainian President Zelensky as in order to influence the Ukraine to investigate the Bidens, Joe Biden and his son working with Burisma. And Trump also wanted Ukraine's new president to investigate the unsubstantiated claim that the Ukraine, not Russia, was behind the effort to influence the 2016 presidential election. And now there are reports that the Department of Justice, there's some investigation that's restarting, or there's now starting to go after James Comey, the FBI, head of the FBI that was fired by Trump. So they intend to really keep this stuff going. But, you know, Dr. Gerald Horn, I remember after the Rodney King uprisings, the uprisings that followed Rodney King, and some people were involved in trying to negotiate a gang truce here in Southern California. And I remember meeting with some of the young warriors. Some people refer to them as gangs. And they were saying, you know, Margaret, they call us gangsters, but this is a gangster state. And they were referring to the United States. And one has to now look at what is happening, because it really seems that there is mob rule going on. I mean, the U.S. ambassador literally had to flee because she was warned she was in danger. Get on the next plane and get out. And now we're getting some of that information. And it seems as though Trump's prediction that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, he'll still get elected. This seems to be bearing out. But Gerald Horn, your thoughts on all of this?
Well, I agree that what happened to Ambassador Yovanovitch in Ukraine may be the most chilling aspect of this entire tawdry chain of events. The fact that she felt her life was in danger and had to flee her post in the middle of the night. And apparently the threats were coming from some of Mr. Trump's comrades or some of his comrades in the Republican Party, including the rather curious Robert Hyde, based in Connecticut, who was a leading member of the Republican Party in Connecticut. I think that this also underscores why the Democrats felt they had to rush through this impeachment, even though revelations are still trickling in, because they felt that they had to throw obstacles in the path of the White House, not only because they were conspiring still with foreign powers to interfere in the 2020 elections, but also who knows what other figures are being threatened, and the Democrats felt they had to put the spotlight on the White House perhaps to deter them. We also see that the Democrats feel that this impeachment process will force some tough votes in the Senate that could jeopardize the reelection chances not only of Susan Collins of Maine, but Senator Gardner of Colorado, perhaps Senator Tillis of North Carolina as well. Likewise, I'm not sure, however, if calling witnesses such as the SAC National Security Advisor, John Bolton, will work, because the Republicans say, well, what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. If you call Bolton, we'll call Hunter Biden, the son of the vice president, who, as you know, was receiving a hefty retainer from the Ukrainian energy company. Mr. Trump says that he was trying to ferret out that alleged corruption, and that's why he was pressing President Zelensky in Kiev. But in any case, even though there are Democrats who feel that that's a fair trade-off, they'll take their chances with Hunter Biden coming before the Senate so that they can get a swing at John Bolton. I'm not so sure if that's going to work out, given all of Hunter Biden's problems. Also, they're talking about calling Adam Schiff, the House prosecutor, the congressman from Southern California, as a witness, alleging that he was somehow conspiring with the whistleblower who blew the whistle on Mr. Trump in the first place. I'm not sure how that vote is going to work out either. So I think listeners should buckle their seatbelts. There is a rough ride ahead, although the key factor is that Mr. Trump's base is not crumbling, and that bodes well for him for November 2020. And as well, if he is not convicted, he will claim that he has been exonerated, and Mr. Trump's credulous base will probably go along with that to the detriment of the rest of us.
Right. And one could only hope. I mean, Nancy Pelosi was roundly criticized for even delaying getting the articles of impeachment over to the Senate. But a lot of people are saying, we discussed this a little bit last week, and Jackie Goldberg was making this point as well, that it was really a clever move because it did allow for more of this information to emerge and for the public itself to see the weight of the evidence against Donald Trump. Now, whether they decide that he still should be the so-named leader of the free world, you know, remains to be seen. But certainly the evidence that's coming out clearly shows a mob, a White House organized like the mob, with threats being made against people, all kinds of illegal activity going on. And just in terms of other presidents who were impeached, we know in 1816, Donald Trump, one of his favorites, Andrew Johnson, was impeached and charged with breaching the Tenure of Office Act, but the Senate narrowly acquitted him by one vote. In 1998, Bill Clinton was impeached, but he was also acquitted by the Senate. So the Senate basically hasn't found anybody guilty, any of these. This is the third Donald Trump. Nixon in 74, he would have been impeached, but he resigned before the House could move ahead with that. So it remains to be seen. Dr. Horn, you're right. We'll hold on to our seats. We'll see what happens next week. And also in the next round, we'll be talking about the presidential race. And of course, there's a connection with all of this and the presidential race.